Welcome to the show.
Hello.
The rock body with the sleeves on their hands. Rock and roll and partying. The one thing that I cannot live about. The most romantic thing I did for someone, I took her out to dinner, gave her dinner and everything, and then afterward it's rocked out and I was having the time of my life.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are the Toucher and Rich radio program. We're in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And I can tell you this much. People are rocking and rolling. When I was growing up in Detroit, there was a lot of Heschers.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a radio station that's still in existence called WRAF. And they would go riff. And they go, baby! That was Arthur P. He did afternoons for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy, I've told this before, who we had the program assistant program director of Rift that worked here for a while. And he would go like, Arthur P. can't come in today. And they go, why? He's like, Arthur P.'s got gout.
He's got the gout.
Yeah, and then they'd be, and then they would be like, well, we'll send a car for you. And he'd be like, Arthur P. can't walk to the limo. Bieber. And every year he had this contest called Maui Wowie. And it was a trip to Maui, you see. And then he would wear a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
And he weighed about 7,000 pounds.
Well, I mean, that's the luck.
Baby!
That's probably what he normally
looked. And he made $1 million a year, and he goes like, I don't even know if I... He said it on the air, but he's like, a little schism for you.
Oh, yeah.
And then, because he didn't know, I mean, too old. And then he would have Ted Nugent in. For like 5 hours. And he'd be like, get it, boy.
There's nothing funnier than when you have or you find like old audio of a 1980s or early 90s rock station. Like, I know that every city had like growing up. Okay, what was the one here? Dan could probably say this. People might forget out. Did you guys have the Friday Night at 5 bust out where they would play like, don't want to work.
That was another station in the building, but yes.
Yeah. Just like, bang on the gym.
That was Dale Dorman working for the weekend. That's what that was at 5 o'clock, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Riff was working for the weekend, and not long ago.
Yeah.
Like, you would go like, ding, 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 ding. Whoa!
That's right.
Here we go. It's 5 o'clock. Time to get crazy.
It's Loverboy.
Tell the boss where to go.
That's right. Like, every rock station for that era had, like, it's time to flip off everyone you work with.
That's right.
And then punch them in the teeth.
It's time See you Monday.
Let's get stoned. I mean, those old tapes are fantastic. If you listen to them back in the day, there's a DVD that somebody gave me like last year. And it's this guy who just for years used to go around to different radio stations and videotape people doing their job, like all these old school DJs. And it starts in like 1982 and goes all the way through like now. Yeah. I just fast forward through anybody in the last 15 years and I go straight to these dudes with the giant beards and they're like looking at the camera and like pointing at them while they're like playing all the sound effects. It is the best entertainment.
Even though if you see the guy who's doing it and you think to yourself, this is an incredibly odd individual that's gone around and taped all these
And they're
people.
All like referencing the guy videotaping. Hey, it's like radio's best friend. And like anyone in the radio in the car cares like who this guy is. Yeah, he's in here videotaping me. I'm pointing. I'm doing the air guns.
And they could all smoke.
Yeah, that was the other thing is like the conditions of the studios were pretty fantastic. And I hear stories about what like used to be at BCN around here where you would find like, you know, drugs in the record collections in the back and stuff like that. I'm like, well, times have changed just a little bit.
Yeah, that's how they used to get to the record promoters. You'd open it up and there'd be a little surprise, a little bug of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Brian?
Hey, Rich, I don't know if you can put the picture on the TV in the back, but is it just me? Fred looked like the fat producer from the kids show Big Time Rush today.
From Big Time Rush. All right, I'm going to have to, 'cause that's like a Nickelodeon show, right?
Yes, it is.
I'm going to Google fat producer from Big Time Rush.
Is it the overweight Rush cover band?
Big Time Rush.
Yes, the Overweight Rush cover band. I had to shave for something today. But
what do you have to shave for?
Just for a client.
Okay.
That client with the freezing thing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The ice thing.
Yeah, I'm desperately trying to find the day in Detroit where they go out to it's called something. There's a day where everyone skips work and they go to the St. Clair.
This is the producer. This is the guy. He says it. You look like, which you don't look anything like right now. Maybe there's an episode where you're wearing the same outfit. I don't know. Big Time Rush was, I think, one of those boy bands that they tried to make big. They came from Nickelodeon.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You'll never find it. There's something in Detroit where, like, every Hesher gets it's like a day where everyone skips work and they go on the boat, and it's got this great name to it, but I can't think of it. It's Downriver, baby!
By the way, so last night while you were doing whatever you were doing and while I was doing whatever I was doing, there was one person somewhere in Boston who was sitting and locked in. I don't even know what channel this was. I guess I'm assuming the MLB Network, watching the good old MLB draft.
I watched some of it.
Did yeah. You really? Oh, yeah. that person is me. I watched some of it.
Is there a more low-rent draft in all of sports than the major baseball draft?
Compared to the other three, it is as ghetto gets. It's so, one room. They jam all these. It's one studio in the MLB Network studios. One room in the MLB Network studios. They jam all the tables in there for all the teams.
There's like,
they
one, have like one guy there.
20, they have like 20 fans that are like scattered among. They're like bleachers you'd find at a high school softball field.
Okay, so by the time the Red Sox pick, which they had the 26th?
Yeah, 26th pick, right.
So by the time, is like anybody in the studio applauding?
It was
anything?
Amazing. The one kid they took had like 15 people with him in the room.
Okay.
He was the guy who was the most popular out of any of them.
So there are people who got drafted, I take it though, however, where there was almost no applause.
Yeah. No, that's right. The applause came from the table of the team that drafted them.
Yeah, there was, I always saw one kid that was there. And he was the kid, he was a high school kid that was taken, I can't remember, but he was there. I watched about like 8 picks.
Yeah, the kid who went third, this enormous Wichita State third baseman, who's like 6'5", 240 mm-hmm. pounds,
yeah.
He was there, but the other picks are like all in college. I mean, that's the thing with the draft. The guys you're drafting are still playing
sure.
for the most part, especially
right,
the kids with the good college program. So a lot of them a lot of it was remote hookup.
Okay, so from what I've heard, the guy that the Red Sox got is like an absolute monster.
Yeah,
like
he's
huge.
6'4", 240.
Okay.
Plays third base. They think he's going to wind up playing first base.
Well, they're comparing to like, what, Freddie Freeman? Is that what it is?
Yes. Okay. Freddie Freeman was the comparison.
Okay, so I mean, is...
But the kid made a lot of points with me because they started interviewing him. And like, well, you know, you're really large for a third baseman. And he goes, well, you know, the Red Sox had a third baseman that have got to control his weight.
I have it right here. It
made me a fan for life.
This guy might be our new favorite player. Yeah. Let's take a listen.
And what do you feel like you have to do to kind of stick to third base?
You know, just watch my weight. I mean, there's another third baseman in Boston called Sandoval that, you know, has had some problems. So, I mean, you know, just stay agile and just continue to take a lot of ground balls and just keep doing my thing.
Hey, you know that fat guy?
Love that.
You know that guy was really fat?
I don't want to be fat like him. Guy that lost control of his weight, who was really fat and ate himself out of the league?
That guy.
Like, you should be psyched because he's already comparing himself to Sandoval. And then he's going to have to watch his weight.
Oh, that was great.
The fact that you take a shot at a guy like that 5 seconds after being drafted was fantastic.
Oh, especially a high school kid.
Yeah, he's 18.
Is this first clip the one of them drafting him and calling his name? Because I want to hear what kind of applause you get here.
Okay.
And you said this was the biggest contingent of these. Like, he had a big crowd.
Yes, he had about 10 or 15 people with him there.
So
in
this
the room.
Is probably more than likely as loud as it got during the first
round. Yeah, I'd say that's
with
right.
The 26th selection of the 2018 MLB draft, the Boston Red Sox select Tristan Cassius, a third baseman from the American Heritage School in Plantation, Florida.
Okay, so that's as loud as it gets. I love how you can hear the echo of the guy announcing it.
It's exactly right.
It's like,
that's Rob Manfred. Yeah,
there's not a lot of people there.
No,
I mean,
no.
It's the tables with the representative from the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sean Casey was one of the representatives.
Fred Lynn was there for the Red Sox last
okay,
night.
So they make the announcement, and if the kid's there, the kid I was talking about, The first one that I saw was the Braves pick. He was some right-handed pitcher at high school, and he's 6'6" or something like that.
Okay.
But no, I sat there and I watched some of the draft. Yeah, I find it fascinating.
I do too. I really do, because it's so low rent compared to the other three major sports.
But also, they're taking kids in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it, you know, and by the way, the NHL draft, I have no idea what's going on either, even though it's in an arena.
Right.
I mean, I have no idea what's going on. And they draft high school kids too, but I never played hockey. Like, watching kids, like, my son's 10. And watching kids that are only 8 years older than him getting taken by major league teams is crazy. I mean, that's nuts. So yeah, but it's very low rent.
But the video they play of the high school kids, you know, you have like one shot from because
there's
you don't
seven
have
people in the stands.
Yeah, there's seven people in the stands, and you have video of kids like fouling balls off because that's all you have. You know, no one sat there during high school games.
By the way,
took video of these guys.
The kid that the Braves took at 8 has apparently the rotation on his curveball.
I know.
But hang on a second. He was 2-4 with like a 0.98 ERA.
Like when they're showing the highlights, it says video courtesy of mom.
Yeah, seriously. You got guys, you know, fielding batting practice grounders. That's what you have of these high school kid fielders.
There's a lot. No, the high school kids, though, there's all those tournaments. There's them at Wrigley Field.
There are a couple of those, but like when you get down to the guy that the Red Sox selected, you know, you have a picture that I saw on Twitter. A guy tweeted out a YouTube video of the kid right after he was taken. Mm-hmm. Literally, it's a guy.
Oh, it's a camera behind
fouling
the plate.
Yeah, it's a guy. He fouled two balls off.
No, it's an at bat. Yeah,
yeah. It's a batting practice at bat. It's not even like in a game at bat.
That's a lot of the video that they get. But this kid had a 0.98 ERA. They say he has if he was in the major leagues now, he'd have the fastest rotation rate on his curveball. I guess the many times it rotates. And he was 2-4.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, how
product of a bad team, Fred. Can't score for him.
He allowed less than a run a game.
Yeah.
And they still lost. The relief pitching must have been fantastic.
Correct.
All right, Rich, we have the...
so that's how I spend my evening.
Well, listen, what else are you going to do? I watched that, and then I watched the movie Game Night. It was quite an exciting time. All right, Rich, what do we got coming up?
Well, today's a big day down at Gillette Stadium. We find out whether or not this beef between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski is truly real. And on top of that, we've got an ex-Celtic talking trash on LeBron James. We will get to that. And also, some other things happened. Oh, I don't know if you paid attention to what's going on with the Eagles, but that's interesting.
Yes, it is. I mean, preemptive. You're going to look bad. You just say, you can't come.
We all have our morning routine.
The kids ain't going to learn nothing.
Thanks for making Toucher and Rich part of yours.
That's right, baby.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okie dokie. Let's go.
Recapping what you missed with Toucher and Rich.
Five, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what happened last evening?
Well, today's the day. It's the day we know just how bad the reported rift may or may not be between Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and Rob Gronkowski. Mandatory minicamp starts in a few hours, and all eyes will be on Gillette to see whether or not Brady and Gronk will finally show up after missing all non-mandatory practices so far. Now, according to Jeff Howe of The Athletic, all indications are that both Brady and Gronk will indeed be present later this morning. Both were at Gillette Stadium for a fantasy camp at the Patriots run. And according to Howe, this has been the date that the two of them have been planning on arriving for weeks now. It was weird, Fred. I saw something tweeted out by NBCSN, and it said, here's a clip of Burt Breer saying that he believes Tom Brady won't show up. And I was like, did he say that on our show? And I went back, I listened to it, and I don't think he said that. I think that his words got mumbled, but the whole time, didn't you get the impression that Burt believed that he was showing up?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought. Like, I heard the clip that they played, and I'm like, I don't think that's exactly what he said. I just think that maybe he might have mumbled his words a little bit, and you might have thought he said is or isn't going to be there. But everything else he said after it seemed to support the fact that he is going to be at camp today. Now, in the Boston Globe, Ben Volen speculated as to whether or not when Brady returns as a punishment, will Tom Brady be relegated to backup to Brian Hoyer during drills? That might be kind of funny to see how that works out. So we'll obviously keep an eye on that this morning. Do you think that Belichick would be that petty to do that?
Sure, but not Brady.
Maybe he just wants to get this over with.
It would be for a lot of other players, but not for Brady.
Yeah, I agree.
I wouldn't think he would do that. Now, what would be kind of funny is that if, for some reason, Brady, you know, missed all the mandatory things at the beginning of the season for one game, he benched Tom Brady, like, for the first couple of plays, that might be funny, like, in the preseason.
Yeah, like, there's, you know, part of me that just like, don't go to this thing today.
Right.
Just, please, create content for us. By the way, what's the fantasy camp? Is that you get to go out, like, adults and play football with them?
You see, I couldn't tell exactly who it was for, but it was held at Gillette, and there were kids, and I think there might have been a few adults there, too. Maybe it has something to do with, like, sponsors, or it's a charity thing.
Because those adult fantasy camps for baseball seem like an absolute nightmare. It just seems like, because, first of all, the players that you play with, you probably remember from when you were a kid, and now they're all old. And then also, like, that you got to go out there, and it's hard enough to, like, drive on the first floor, first hole of in golf, where there's a bunch of people looking at you. I can only imagine if you're on the field with, like, guys you watch playing baseball, how terrible you'd play. Like, that you'd get the yips so bad that you would be throwing the ball into the stands. That just seems like an... And then they give you, like, the uniform. And then you, like, Billy Crystal. And,
yeah,
and then,
the uniform part, then it's like, all right, now we're wearing costumes. But to take some tips and pointers from some of those guys, that would be kind of cool.
No, for what? I mean, I'm not...
Yeah, just because it's kind of nice to know. I mean, and maybe you could teach your kids that.
There's plenty of ways that you can go and find people that can teach your kids a lot of things.
You know, but to have somebody like Dale Murphy stand across from you. I'm trying to think of somebody Dale like who would be Murphy. Doing a fantasy camp now. Like from like the 80s.
Dan Petrie.
Dave Rosma.
Sure.
Well, Rosma.
I forgot there's a story with Rosma.
Yeah, Rosma, for my friend's work, he was doing stuff with the Tigers and... They had him go to a meeting, and then afterwards they're like, do you want to hit? And he's like, sure. And it's Pete Rosma, I believe.
Okay.
And like who was? It might be Dave Rosma. And he was out there, and oh, boy.
Like, who is...
Not good.
I want to know who's on the fantasy camp circuit right now. Like, who's on the baseball fantasy camp circuit?
They probably get decent names.
Okay. So here we go. So next year, January 20th through the 27th, Red Sox Fantasy Camp. Let's see, John, if you can name any of the people that might be involved in the Red Sox Fantasy Camp.
Bill Lee's got to be one of them.
No, he's not there.
I bet you Jim Rice does it.
How about El Guapo, Rich Garces?
Because
he was part of the alumni game last week. So
I'll give you one. Mike Timlin.
Okay. Keith Folk.
You know what? His picture's on here, but it's not in the one for, like, he was one from years past. You got Louis Tiant, Mike Timlin, Trot Nixon,
yeah,
and Ellis Burks, and Rich Gedman.
Okay.
That's not a good one.
That's a lot of that. It's a who's who of who?
See, yeah.
Well, see, if you were a Red Sox fan, you'd be like, yeah, I'm psyched.
No, you wouldn't.
I get a chance to meet Rich Gedman? Hell yes. I'm in.
Oh, yeah. It's a real treat. Now,
starting catcher.
Because there's some of them that get decent names.
I'm looking at the Yankees one right now, and I'm trying to see who they've got lined up for that. By the way, the camp, like, to do it for a week, it's like $5,000
again. What are you as an adult going to feel like you're in the game? Like that, I'm actually, look at this. Wow, I'm wearing the uniform.
Has anyone done this before? I actually would not mind finding out, like, what the experience is like. Like, whether at some point you're just like, oh boy, maybe I didn't sign up getting dressed up.
Detroit Tigers fantasy camp.
Okay.
This past January, 21st to the 28th.
All right. Okay. Rosma.
All right. So hold on. Rosma. Yes, Dave Rosma.
Yeah, he does everything.
Dave Rosma. There were 1986 World Series champions.
Chet Lemon.
10 or 15 of them. Chet Lemon, not there.
Okay. Barbaro Garvey.
Barbaro Garvey? No, not there.
All right.
However, how scary is it that I remember that player and know exactly who you're talking about?
There's no way Lou Whitaker did it.
No.
Their closer, the fat guy, he was really good.
Aurelio Rodriguez?
Aurelio Rodriguez? No.
Not him. Todd Jones.
Wow, I don't even know.
Howard Johnson.
That's right, baby.
Tom Brookins. You talk about Juan Berenguer?
Juan Berenguer.
He's the general.
He's in there. Placido Polanco, Nate Robinson, Jake Wood. Let's see, Rick Leach, Dan Petrie, Frank Tanana. There you go. He's part of that.
Very nice.
I told you the story I know about Frank Tanana.
And then we have the, as part of the 1968 World Series champions, Al Kaline and Mickey Lolich.
All right, so see, there's two big names.
Yeah. So I guess I was right. So this is the one that the Patriots did is not like that, where you pay and you go, and this is like more of a charity type of situation.
Okay. Yes.
And that's obviously a pretty cool thing that they'd be doing. But I'll tell you what was interesting that came out yesterday in other Patriots news. Remember that guy, Cassius Marsh, that we started suddenly caring about this week? You know, the guy who was on the Patriots for a minute last season, and all of a sudden...
Tattoos McGee.
Yeah, the guy who was obsessed with Magic the Gathering and had those super cool marks under his eyes when he would go out there. And he said that it wasn't fun being a Patriot, despite when he was here telling Jeff Howe how awesome it was to be a Patriot. Well, we may know now why he's so butthurt. So as part of Albert Breer's Monday column, our friend Bert Breer for Sports Illustrated... Marsh apparently, quote, pitched a fit over playing time in the locker room during halftime of the Patriots' 33-8 win over the Oakland Raiders in Mexico City last season. Jeff Howe later added that Marsh threw a Gatorade jug as part of his tirade. Now, the Patriots are winning 17-0 at halftime, during which Marsh played just two defensive snaps and another six on special teams. Marsh was cut 2 days later, and his tantrum was reportedly a reason for the move. So he was just bitching about not getting enough playing time, even though they were up 17-0. Dude apparently picks up a Gatorade jug and tosses it, and Bill's like, man, you're not a big enough player for me to have to deal with this crap. You are gone. So that is apparently what led to Cassius Marsh's unceremonious dismissal from the Patriots.
Well, if I understand the Gatorade jug being a little exclamation point on it, but I have a feeling that there is about a dozen players a game that are very upset about playing time and letting it be known.
But how many of them, like, make a scene?
No,
like
that's what I said. I understand the Gatorade jug.
Sure.
Being a problem. But, yeah, I mean, you need playing time to get paid. And, by the way, the Patriots camp was for people who helped rep gift bags for Operation Care for the troops, our troops foundation.
Cool.
Okay, Rich, we have, I know, a NBA player, a Celtics player talking about some things,
mm-hmm.
and so much more. Here are the headlines.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're touching Rich. Rich, what else is going on?
Well, with all the fun stuff going on at Gillette today, there was also some interesting TV last night, including the Capitals game, which we'll get to. But last night, Isaiah Thomas of the Multiple Requests for Video Tributes and the other Isaiah Thomas of the Hey, I Made the Already Bad Knicks Even Worse, they were both on Jimmy Kimmel last night. And they're playing a game where the older Isaiah was absolutely kicking the young Isaiah's ass, and young IT... His last question was to identify a picture of Marvin the Martian. Here was his response.
Yeah, one more question for Isaiah 2. What is the name of this alien? Do you know the name of that alien?
Guys, I've watched that numerous times, too. I'm like the Cavs. I'm going to get swept.
Isaiah 1, just to rub it in, tell him what the name of that alien is.
It looked like I was going to say a Smurf. I don't know.
It's not a Smurf. That's Marvin the Martian, but it doesn't matter.
Okay, first of all, two things about that. Number one, how the hell do they not know who Marvin the Martian is?
I don't know.
Like, either one of them.
Isaiah the first should know that. Hands down, he should know that.
Isaiah the second.
That's his wheelhouse right there.
Well, listen, he was always devoting himself to the game.
I see.
He was gym rat.
For all of these guys who play in the NBA now who seem to worship Space Jam because they grew up on Space Jam, how do you not know that?
Well, Marvin, he's a referee at the end. You really don't see him that much in Space Jam.
Huh?
You don't see Marvin the Martian in Space Jam too much.
That to me was very strange. But then the other one is, of course, Isaiah Thomas, who seems... obviously still a little hurt about not even being a member of the Cavs now and being on the Lakers.
Just pissed at everybody.
So it goes from, you know, wanting his video tribute with the Celtics to now not liking the Cavs. So have you heard about the new controversy that's been brewing between, I don't know whether you saw this happen during the game, but there was a point that wasn't truly explain when it was going on, but Steph Curry got in the face of Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah, yeah.
So Kendrick Perkins has been somewhat of a controversial figure on the bench, because first in game one, you had Draymond Green, who was mocking him by pretending he was like a cheerleader. Yeah. And, Kendrick Perkins sitting there, and Perks, of course, had that face where he just looks like he wants to murder the guy. And then you saw Steph Curry get into Kendrick Perkins' face, and at first you didn't really realize what was going on. And since then, there has been a angle on a video where you can see why Steph was pissed. So Kendrick Perkins, and it's very strange why Kendrick Perkins, who's not playing and is in a suit, is like sitting in the center of the bench.
Yeah, usually those guys are down the end. Yeah. Every Celtic and active player is down the end.
He's an intimidation factor.
That's right.
I'm not kidding you. That might be why he's there. Because why else would you put... First of all, Kendrick Perkins, I think, only played like 15 minutes the entire season. They signed him right at the end of the season.
I don't know, but if you expect people to get... If you're putting him in the middle of the bench because you expect people to get... like they're going to really think that Kendrick's going to fight him. You got another thing.
Well, I mean, he's obviously somebody who is getting... He's pissing off the Warriors because you've had two players now kind of mocking him.
Well, I just
while
think
sitting
that
there.
Draymond Green, I think that Perkins was probably yelling stuff and Draymond was very happy.
He thought it was great.
What was going on, so he teased him. And all right, you're about to tell us why Steph Curry went after him.
So Steph Curry at one point takes a three and misses it.
It was at the end of the third quarter.
Yeah,
it was just a buzzer beater shot at the end of the third quarter.
He was trying to get it in, trying to make a buzzer beater, and so he misses, and so Steph Curry kind of steps out of bounds, and Kendrick Perkins is sitting, and he was sitting this way before Steph even got to him, but he is Captain Slouch, and Perkins is a big guy, so his knees are almost hanging over the inbounds line. I mean, he's right there taking up almost the entire out-of-bounds section in front of the bench, and Steph kind of moves backwards after he shoots it and like almost falls over Kendrick Perkins' legs. So Steph gets in his face, like, you could have caused an injury. And a matter of fact, afterwards, they even asked about that, and the assumption was is everyone was pissed at him because he could be trying to trip people and make them injure themselves. And I just think it's because Perkins, that's the way he sits, and he's a big dude. And he got tripped over, and of course, Perkins stands up. But now everyone's about Kendrick Perkins. I just find it very strange that if you're not even playing, why the hell are you sitting next to LeBron James in the middle of the bench during
he's
the
an
game,
enforcer, in case anyone tries to come after him.
I guess he is.
Don't forget his running with Drake in Toronto.
Well, that was funny because Drake's such an idiot.
That's the point. Is he seems to be a lightning rod for these things. A guy who hasn't played has now had two things with the Warriors and one in Toronto.
I mean, that's a great point. I mean, throughout the playoffs, and for a guy who played 15 minutes,
and that was in one game.
Yeah, he's getting in the face of all these other. You don't think that they're putting him there just so he can mouth off and base, maybe they believe he's some
leadership.
Sort of intimidating factor?
Leadership.
I'm just surprised everyone's seen Space Jam. That anyone would have any inclination to see Space Jam at all.
If you were a kid during that era, I mean, you saw Space Jam.
When did it
come
out?
Probably like 94, 95.
Oh, yeah, I'm 20 years old at that point.
Right.
I had no interest in seeing Space Jam. But, I've never seen Space Jam.
But this generation of basketball players grew up as a kid watching Space Jam. Yeah. And if they played in the NBA, that's a movie they obviously wanted to see because Michael Jordan was in it.
So, Walk, how did you see Space Jam?
I just did. I saw Space Jam. Not in a theater, but I saw it.
Hank loves it. Like, I mean,
my kids love it, too. Yeah. That's something separate. But, yeah, I didn't go to the theater to watch it, but I've seen it.
So you're sitting around, you're like 30 years old, and you pop that bad boy in?
I don't remember, but that probably is close to the truth.
So you had all
these... I was working nights, and unlike you, I wasn't dating a stripper at the time marriages. So
yeah, that's all that matters.
Well, I didn't have anything like that to occupy my time after I was done.
But there was cable.
Sports radio update guys didn't pull in the stripper people.
Well, it depends how much money you had. But so it was just on TV and a series of, because cable's around at that
right,
point.
Yes.
So there's like, at the point probably, 100 channels?
Yeah.
And you lock into the Bugs Bunny.
It was more Jordan.
Mel Blanc's not even alive during it.
I watched that as an adult. I did. There was we had a college closed circuit station. When I was at Georgia Tech, there was like a station that where they just show movies all the time, and they chose Space Jam as like one of the five for 1 month. And I think like people would get stoned and watch Space Jam and just sit around and watch it. But I remember, I think I watched it the entire thing as it came on. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of interesting. And then Bill Murray showed up. And
tour de force performance by Bill Murray.
Yeah, but that's at the end.
He's at the beginning, too.
Yeah, he's at the beginning. They're playing golf with Larry Bird.
Yes.
And then Bill
Jordan
Murray shows
Bird
up.
And Bill Murray.
And that's how they get Michael Jordan. He gets sucked through the golf hole,
that's
right?
That's right.
Yeah, I remember that.
So. All right. Well,
Larry's not white. Larry's clear. See? Very funny line by Bill Murray at the beginning of the
movie. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But now I'm remembering all the people that
racist.
Are in it. That he's clear?
Yes.
well, that's what that movie's known for, the mass racism.
Mass racism.
That's right.
Is, you know? What's wrong with the way Larry Bird's skin is?
Who was on the Monstars? It was Muggsy Bogues.
Sean Bradley.
Yeah,
okay. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. What a
you, I didn't say it. Early 90s, Fred.
No. Sean Bradley was never popular.
Well, he was...
But at that time,
some of that new second number two overall pick shine was on him.
Yeah, there was that year, right?
Yeah,
was Darko in the movie?
No,
too?
Yeah. So it was Bradley,
Barkley,
Bogues, Barkley, Ewing,
yeah.
And LJ, Larry Johnson.
Oh, that's right, Larry Johnson,
whoop.
Fresh off of the
those are the five
UNLV run.
How did you turn it off? How could you not? When did you see that collection?
I watched the entire thing as an adult. I did. I watched it. And I think I was just because when you're in college, sometimes you have nothing to do.
I don't even have that excuse. I still watched it.
No. John just saw Hoops.
Yep.
I don't know how that funnels through into your adulthood. Because mm-hmm. that movie's been on like a million times when I've been flipping around.
Sure. No interest in stopping, huh? No interest
in
watching?
It's a Bugs Bunny movie. I don't want to see the... If it was like back in the day, every Bugs Bunny thing since Mel Blanc died is just gross.
I would agree with that.
What do you mean gross?
Like, it's just not Bugs Bunny anymore.
Yeah. No, they had his son come in and do it for a while. Mel Blanc's son come in and do it for a while.
Yeah, see, they're trying to save face.
Yeah.
Probably Billy West now as he makes $1 trillion a year doing that.
96. It was 1996 when it came out. Yeah. So that's
wow.
The timing's
so
perfect.
So I'm 21 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What do we have coming up?
We will get to some quotes from Terry Rozier. He's been talking about what's he believes is going to happen this offseason. By the way, someone's saying Marcus Morris swiped at Perkins after he dove under the bench. So I immediately thought he did something dirty when Morris came flying in. I don't remember that.
Well, if it happened, who can argue? All right.
Oh, Danny Ainge is in Space Jam 2. I forgot about that. Danny Ainge is in it.
Is he?
Yep.
See, what's
that.
Danny Ainge doing in
We've
it?
Talked to him about that. Danny Ainge was in a scene where...
He was a player, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, it was during a game.
Yeah.
And it was Ainge and... was it when he was with the Suns?
Might have been.
Did they have like the stuff on him so they could animate it into someone else? Or was it actually Danny Ainge?
No, it's actually Danny Ainge.
I think he's playing. Charles Barkley was with Phoenix at the time, and so Ainge
that might
on
be
the
where they were. They kidnapped.
Where they kidnapped
Charles
the talent of Charles Barkley. So.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, Space Jam looks like it's something I have to investigate.
Broaden your horizons, friend.
I've always kicked myself for not having the reference point of Space Jam. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub, where Toucher and Rich. Rich, what else is going on?
Real quick, so this has kind of been out of the news for a couple days, but now it's resurfacing because apparently a decision is going to be made by tomorrow. But the whole Brian Colangelo situation, who had the burner accounts, he's the GM for the 76ers, who apparently was using five different accounts to tweet out disparaging things about members of the organization, about his own players like Joel Embiid, including medical information, which had not obviously been released. They're saying that by tomorrow, they're going to make a decision as to whether or not to keep him or fire him. But I read a pretty interesting article yesterday from David Aldridge. And David Aldridge obviously is somebody who's been working around people in the NBA. He's obviously got a lot of friends and people he's spoken to. He now works for TNT at NBA.com. And he poses a pretty good theory. He said, you know, when you take a look at how the Ringer got this information, he says, I have a hard time believing that this was just some guy with a lot of time on his hands who sat around trying to figure out, hey, maybe the GM for the 76ers has some burner accounts. Let's try to find out who it is.
Yeah, that's my point the whole time was, you know.
Who is this?
Yeah, they're just like, no, yeah, and it's just... kind of random. It's some random account, and how you put all this together is fascinating to me.
So the one thing that he came up with is he said he didn't say he thought it was him, but he thought that there's a chance that he believed that could have been leaked by Hinkie, who was of course the GM before them. They think that
in order to make an effort, because he rips on Hinkie in some of those tweets as well. Right. I mean, it's like, you know, there was things that were on there that said, why is everyone giving him credit? Colangelo came in and did all the hard work, and, you know, I'm sick of people not giving Colangelo all the proper credit. So maybe Hinkie knew that Colangelo was tweeting from these burner accounts and just got sick of it. Because if they got LeBron James, and if, or let's say they got Kawhi Leonard, or they made some sort of big move, Hinkie would probably think, well, now there's no turning back and everyone's going to give this guy all of the credit for making all this happen. This is my one chance to take him down before he's all of a sudden the golden boy for pulling off this type of signing. So this is, once again, Aldridge does not specifically say that he thinks it's him, but
it would make logical
sense. It would make logical sense. And if that ended up being the truth, I mean, that would be fantastic. But don't you think when you hear about this, that this has to be somebody who's inside, who has somewhat of a vendetta about from this guy?
I have no idea with all the crap that flies around Twitter how anyone would know about five burner accounts, including one burner account that he never tweeted out of.
Yeah, right.
That's the thing that's interesting about it. It wasn't like he had five that were all exceptionally active.
Mm-hmm.
The one that they know is his, that he's admitted to, has literally never tweeted. Mm-hmm. Now, how would you know that was him?
Sure.
That was one of the five that were exposed.
Yep.
So, it seemed odd to me with all the crap on Twitter and all the millions and millions of people on Twitter, even if you were, you know, sending out bad information about players to a writer or something like that, how they would even pay attention to it. Can you imagine, like, what, who's a, like Gary Washburn probably gets a billion people with a billion theories saying bad things about everybody. Wouldn't you just, for the most part, ignore all of it?
Well, you would think so, unless it came from somebody legitimate.
No, but what I'm saying is to organically go, hey,
yeah,
this is interesting. I wonder who this is. Yeah, the whole thing has seemed weird to me from the very beginning.
Well, Aldridge's report's kind of funny because he talked about the writer for the Ringer. He goes, well, the writer himself acknowledged that he was a frequent critic of Colangelo's and would likely be viewed as a sympathetic media person to whom such information could be given with an expectation of a follow-through / publishing. And he said, if Colangelo were to land, say, James or, say, Kawhi Leonard this summer, the Sixers would be set as a powerhouse for years to come, and Colangelo's status as an elite-level GM would be cemented as the conference finals and or finals appearances flowed. This was the optimal and maybe the last chance to take him down. It doesn't mean what is alleged didn't happen. It does mean that someone may have had an axe to grind, and as such, the information they provided needs to be vetted even more thoroughly than it would be normally. And he, you know, to once again kind of hints that this is about Sam Hinkie. He said,
"If it is, how funny is it that they started making fun of his collars?"
Well, it's great.
Yeah, like, you know, he was like obsessed with the way his shirts were pressed and stuff like that. So they just started screwing with him and saying it was his collars.
So that's the new theory, and they're saying that they've hired a law firm to come in and try to figure out who it is, and they say that even if it does end up being his wife, because there was that whole someone once again connected the dots that the last two digits of a phone number that his wife has published online match the two digits that to get your password back it would send it to. I'm telling you, it is, people have so much damn time on their hands.
Yeah.
But even if it is his wife, they're saying that could still be enough to scare away potential free agents, because that kind of information is shared and they can't trust who's leaking it where.
Sure.
So
I understand that.
I there's no way they keep him around. There's no way, because they're going to freak out that they're going to lose LeBron James over this.
That's the thing. They're really one piece away from being set for years if they get the right guy. I don't know if Kawhi Leonard's that guy. It depends on his injury. LeBron James is certainly that guy. And Philadelphia 76ers fans have been waiting how long for this process to evolve to this?
All I know is that Vegas believes they're going to make a big move. Because right now, if you look at the odds to win the championship next year, they're in third ahead of the Celtics. So they believe whatever move that they're going to make is going to make them a better team in the East than the Boston Celtics.
Stay off Twitter. I haven't seen any story that was positive about it within the last 6 months.
Twitter?
Yeah, and it's everything that happens, everything you read that's a reaction to something on Twitter is bad. There's never, like, a story anymore. In its infancy, there were, like, comedians who made hay from their Twitter accounts.
Sure, sure.
But that's like anything else, is that when there's, you know, only a few people on it and you've come up with the idea first.
Now it's just a world of anger.
And I'm reading more and more people are just like, more and more celebrities and stuff are just like, oh, hell no. Like, what am I? No. No way. To say like, hey, I have a movie out. Nope. Because something's going to happen. Something bad's going to happen. It's all bad. Every story that comes out now is bad in getting people in trouble. You never read a story that was like, you know, recently, like, Sam Jones was just a carpenter from Peoria, Illinois, but then he got on Twitter and started killing it, and now he's going to be on The Tonight Show. Like, you never hear that.
He won an argument, and now he's been hired by the talking heads over at CNN to win arguments.
Exactly.
That's right. It
doesn't happen that way.
He's affecting public policy in his city.
Yeah, you never see any of that.
Now, back in the day when it was like, hey, look, Shaq has all of a sudden become a star again because he's hiding tickets around town using Twitter. Remember that in the early day, like, Shaq was the Twitter guy?
Well, there was one comedian, I can't remember his name, who, like, revitalized his career, really got going because of Twitter.
Well, Conan O'Brien kind of had a thing. Remember when he lost his show and, like, Twitter was the way he connected with people and he got, like, a zillion followers?
Yeah, okay, yeah. So careers were made. I mean, there was the as small as it ended up being, that dad boner, the guy got to put out a book, he went on a tour. I mean, that was all based on Twitter. But I don't care what your account is now or what your parody account is, it's going to get lost.
Yeah.
And you ain't going to get nothing. And then, obviously, if it's anonymous, they're going to find out who you are. So take that. Get on anything else you want to get on. Instagram takes a lot of time to put something up. And I'll tell you this, is that Facebook, whatever, but Twitter, for some reason, maybe the anonymity of it, but for some reason, Twitter is just not a good place to go.